evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, April 1st, 2019. A South Sudanese newspaper editor flees the country. And a SPLA-IO spokesman accuses Yei River state officials of blocking humanitarian workers' access to people in need. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Government and opposition leaders in Wau State say despite the delay in implementing various activities in the revitalized peace agreement before the pre-transitional period ends, they are committed to maintaining peace and stability in the state. Michael Letit has more for VOA from Wau.
Speaking at the weekend forum in Wau, organized by the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring and Mechanism, or CITISAM, Governor Angelo Taban Biagio said, now that opposition and government leaders are peace partners, they should continue encouraging all citizens to accept the September peace deal. Speaking in Arabic, Taban says the two sides must work together to reassure citizens that the deal will hold.
The revitalized peace agreement that we sign is our common interest. We shall unite us. That is why I initiated the program of trust and confidence building among ourselves. When we are confidently interacting and talking together, that means we are preparing the way towards the full implementation of the peace agreement in reality.
But full implementation is far behind schedule. The pre-transitional period is due to expire in May, yet security arrangements have not been completed, such as training one and unified army, nor have the number of states or their boundaries been agreed upon yet. Anthony Fada Taban, the SPLA-IO designated governor for what the armed opposition group calls Wau Federal State, said at the same event that implementing the peace deal is the only way to restore stability in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Father says if ordinary people know the terms of the agreement, they will feel as part of the peace process.
The signed revitalized peace agreement has given the right of all South Sudanese. That is why we as partners should continue to put our efforts together so as to keep this peace for the sake of our citizens. Let us bring back the peace to our people as before.
Benson Monday, the CITISAM team leader in Wau, praised the parties for respecting the permanent ceasefire despite sporadic clashes in parts of the country. Speaking at the forum, Monday says people will only believe peace has been restored across South Sudan when they feel secure and are able to move freely from one part of the country to another.
In the spirit of the agreement that you signed, you respect it by all standards, and we see peace, tranquility returning to the Republic of South Sudan, and that one can enable development to take effect.
Sam K. Mahamure, who heads the ENMIS office in Wau, says ENMIS is eager to bring the partners to the peace agreement together to help implement the deal.
What brings all the parties together here is the fact that we have an agreement and we have people, citizens that are yearning for peace. I see that spirit coming. I see the confidence between the parties, and I would like only to encourage this to continue.
Linda Ferdinand Hussein, who represented civil society organizations at the forum, praised the former warring parties for coming together. Speaking in Arabic, Hussein says she hopes to see more progress in implementing the peace agreement before the transitional government is scheduled to be formed in May.
Our people are already seeing things in reality. For example, series of conference building meetings, memorandum of understanding, roads leading to the town have opened, and we can see IOs are coming in and going out without any problem. This will enable peace to be real and give hope for common citizens that peace is coming.
About 100 participants from the government and opposition took part in the forum. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The SPLA in opposition is accusing authorities in Yei River State's Kupera County of obstructing humanitarian aid organizations from accessing areas under their control. They say a few days ago, the government blocked aid agencies from conducting a needs assessment and delivering relief aid to people in that county. Daniel Friday Martin has this report for VOA from Yei.
The SPLA IO says, despite efforts made by humanitarian partners to reach the vulnerable population in villages controlled by the opposition, Kupera County Commissioner Emmanuel Kemis Richard has blocked convoys of aid agencies from accessing the area. Kupera County is located on the southeastern tip of Yei River State and is among the areas most affected by the conflict. SPLA IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel blames the government for blocking humanitarian workers from reaching thousands of civilians trapped in Koyoki Village.
If the government prevents them from crossing, the government knows the reason why they prevented them from crossing to our territories. As SPLA IO, we don't stop anyone from crossing to government or our territory. The commissioner of Kupera is always behind all hindrance in Kupera County. We are implementing the security arrangements and be peaceful with each other, and we don't want to be dragged into problems by politicians.
Kupera County Commissioner Emmanuel Kemis Richard flatly denies the accusation.
These are fabricated allegations, and there should be independent bodies that should not only rely on the misinformation from the SPLIO and then the information from some individuals within these NGOs. Come physically to Kupera, go and see, verify those allegations on the ground before you take a decision. Let us work together as partners to help our people. Because our goal as government, the opposition, and even these NGOs is to help the vulnerable people.
Richard charges that SPLA IO forces broke the bridges on roads linking Kupera County headquarters to rural Payams at the height of the fighting in 2016. Colonel Gabriel admits the SPLA IO broke some bridges in the area, but claims that there are alternative routes humanitarian organizations can use to access the vulnerable population. Speaking in his native Pojulu dialect, a Kupera County resident who prefers to bed and fight only as Juma for safety reasons says thousands of villagers are in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
What people need urgently in the village is a house, seeds, food and non-food items, and medicines. People are suffering, and we are calling on the NGOs to reach to the villages and deliver humanitarian assistance to end the suffering of the people.
Mohamed Sion is the head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Yei River State. Sion says aid agencies want to conduct a joint assessment of the humanitarian needs of the people trapped by the conflict in the rural areas of the state.
We have already conducted assessment in Kupera. You know, I think we have green light to do that. We had a discussion with all of the parties, including the governor, the commissioner, and they have all given us green light to conduct our assessment in Koyoki. And as soon as we come back, maybe a week after, we'll do the response. We have already done some assessment in Kupera. After the response, we'll determine whether there's need to go back to do additional assessment. Those challenges are there, but we are trying to work around them, and we just hope that those kind of cooperation will continue.
Obed Taban, the deputy head of the Yei River State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, confirms that Kupera County residents need help. He insists that aid groups can access the area.
Since last year up to now, Kupera never received any single humanitarian services up to now. And then I don't know actually what the NGOs are doing. In Kupera, we have the population currently of returnees and IDPs of 21,000 people. Of course, they lack clean water, and they lack even food items and medicine. We have opened all corridors to aid workers to go and then penetrate to every part of Yei River State, actually delivering services to our people.
Since last year, aid agencies made humanitarian assessment visits to the area. Chapter 2 of the River Talas Peace Agreement requires all parties to allow humanitarian workers unhindered access to vulnerable populations and to guarantee the free movement of the civilians. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
South Sudan's general education minister says more than 2.2 million school-aged children remain out of school. Minister Deng Deng Hak says the situation endangers the country's future. Some parents in Bor complain that the deteriorating economic situation, characterized by skyrocketing commodity prices in the country, makes it nearly impossible for parents to pay tuition fees. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
While inaugurating a half dozen primary schools in Bor today, built by NGO Save the Children, Minister Hoch said the vast majority of out of school South Sudanese children are girls. He says every child in South Sudan should have a right to education, regardless of their sex.
Some people leave girls behind and they take boys to school. It happened to me when I was taken to school in 1972. My maternal uncle took me to school in the stead of my elder sister, and this is a common practice. We want to end this practice. We want both boys and girls to go to school. If my sister went to school, she would have done as well as I did. Perhaps she would have done better than I did.
Hoch says the government will work with aid agencies to ensure that more children, especially girls, enrolled in school and stay in school.
It is very important that children go to school because education is right, and education is the way to ensure that development goes ahead. Without education, you cannot dream of development. And with education, everything is possible. This is why we want to encourage you today to take your children to school.
Ruben Matiang is Assistant Manager of Education at Save the Children for Jongle Estate.
Many children are learning under the trees. And when they are learning under the trees, they are affected by weather conditions. Either wind, sun, and the rains. And when they are taken into classrooms, they will have their full lessons, comparable sitting on their classrooms and attending their lessons, and will learn well. That's why we decided to construct a classroom for children, so that they improve their learning condition.
Jonglei State Governor Pili Vagwir praised Save the Children for improving the learning conditions of children across the state.
It is these children, it is these people that are getting education that will take care of scientific research in the future, that will manage the environment, whether it is in the river or geologists that will take care of what is underground. They will be the one that will manage our space so that we monitor what is happening globally. So I believe those sponsors and donors that are helping education in South Sudan, I must congratulate them because they are taking care of our future. So thank you very much, Norwegian. Thank you, Save the Children, and thank you, the implementers.
Agwir says the government will work with parents to ensure that children who have dropped out are back in school. Bor resident Michael Guy says some of his children and other minors under his care are not in school because he cannot afford to pay school fees for all of them.
If you are a government employee, the money that you receive a month cannot even pay the school fees for one child. So it is hard sometimes because after the end of every time, that is 3 months, the payment is supposed to be done at the school, and the school will be asking for those money. But you might have heard that it took long. Sometimes civil servant can have something like 4 to 5 months without receiving salaries, and yet the school will be asking for the school fees. And if you don't have anything to do, you don't have money, you don't have any cow to sell or anything that belongs to you, then definitely the child will drop out from the school.
Guy says he hopes the new transitional government of national unity, expected to be formed in May, will improve the country's economy so that all children can go back to school in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the 25th anniversary of a very sad day in Rwanda. More on that when we come back.
think. People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could go to university anywhere, where would you go?
I would go to Oxford University because I think from there I can meet international students, I can meet the best lecturers around and professors around.
Harvard, because it has a good quality of education.
Makerere in Uganda is the best university I would choose because for the recent years it has been named the best university in Africa.
University of Malawi that I've taken. I think they offer nice programs.
Europe and Germany in particular welcoming Africans like me. So for me, I think I would feel much comfortable to go to a university in Germany than going elsewhere.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Rwanda is preparing for the 25th anniversary of the genocide perpetrated against the Tutsis on Sunday. People convicted of their roles in the wave of violence are serving their sentences and say they have confessed and have embraced reconciliation. Those who will soon be released vow they will not promote ethnic discrimination ever again. And there are others who claim they are being illegally imprisoned after finishing 25-year sentences. Over 1 million ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed. Eugene Uwimana has visited the Majaragara prison and has this story.
Mudadari Pierre Celestin is the chief of prisoners in Kigali's Mageragere prison. He's among 1,863 genocide convicts who are serving time there. He's talking during a visit by the Ministry of Justice and other players in Rwanda's justice sector. He spoke of fellow prisoners who he claims are being denied justice. There are many who have been denied their rights of appealing. There are also some who have been jailed by incompetent courts. Fixed assets of some prisoners have been auctioned without any court decision. Honorable Minister, we beg you to help us get our dossiers from the National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide, because some prisoners claim that they are still in jail when their sentences have ended. He specifically mentioned Emmanuel Wimana, who was jailed for 18 years by a traditional court only to have the correction service decided 30 years. It denied to release me, saying that there are other fires in the Commission for the Fight Against the Genocide, which is, say, 30 years. Justice Minister and Attorney General Johnson Businge says his group will examine such claims. With these sectors, we are together here, Rwanda Investigation Bureau, prosecution, all who are here, I promise that they will give you the responses. And if you feel satisfied, well, if not, it will be due to different reasons that we will study again. Some genocide prisoners have shown remorse and apologized to the families of victims. Mwamini Nyirandegeya has served 20 years of her life sentence and knows she will not be released. Please go and tell Rwandans that we, the genocide perpetrators, have been already corrected. We have recognized atrocities we have committed. Tell Rwandans that we are sorry and urge them to be united. Mwamini urges the government and other civil society organizations to work hand in hand to rehabilitate ex-prisoners. She says it is not easy to face and live with families whose relatives were killed or who escaped death. This is what Prison Fellowship Rwanda does. The faith-based non-profit organization works with the government to foster reconciliation, peace and social healing for individuals affected by the 1994 genocide. Jean-Paul Nwari is the organization's chief operations. He explains how and why they have taken the initiative. We accompany genocide prisoners in their lives. Several studies have shown that trauma and depression in prisoners have climbed higher. prison fellowship approaches them. We have our psychologists. They have them in several sessions with their families, the families of victims, and they found economic projects so that they ran them together as partners, as the way to properly integrate and mobilize the world community. Come back from the prison were relatives of victims who say they have healed. Skugawa Samori's father was killed in the hospital. He says unity and reconciliation activities seem to have produced sweet fruits. Now Rwandans are marrying each other regardless of their differences. We are equally collaborating, whether you are Tutsi, Hutu, or Twa Rwandan. And the good thing is that even the genocide prisoners who come back from jail have good behavior. I think trainings and other correctional services they undergo really work. However, there are other Rwandans who aren't ready to forgive and disseminate discriminatory messages that could revive the genocide ideology. Rwanda Correctional Service now counts over 27,000 genocide convicts and says only about 6,000, or 22%, have apologized and been forgiven by victims. The government says the anniversary will draw many international figures. It even invited the French President Emmanuel Macron, who leads the country that Rwanda accuses of playing a major role in the genocide. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
A Kenyan teacher who won this year's $1 million Global Teacher Prize in Dubai received a rock star welcome home recently. Peter Tabichi, a science teacher and Franciscan brother, returned to his rural school in Kenya over the weekend after receiving the coveted award. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from Njuro in Kenya's Nakuru County.
There was pomp and color everywhere. At Keriko Secondary School, where Tabichi teaches physics and mathematics, thousands filled the dusty playground to see their hero. John Wangai is the school's deputy principal.
It's a great feat. So it was a situation of disbelief. A situation where you could not imagine that it's Keriko of all the schools. It is Mokaya of all the teachers. I think about thousands of teachers who had applied. I think about the first African to have got this award. With great happiness, with jubilation, we are excited. Right now, even the whole village, the whole of Pwani, the whole of Njoro, we are talking about this great teacher who has brought glory to Keriko Secondary School, who has brought glory to the whole of the county and, by extension, the whole of the republic.
The 36-year-old teacher was named winner of the Global Teacher Prize in Dubai last week. On his arrival, Tabichi told a cheering crowd that he was delighted to be back home with the trophy.
I feel so excited to be back to my school where I teach.
What difference do you think the award presents to the community?
To the community, I'm very sure it's going to transform the lives of the community, the learners, teachers. It is going to raise the status of the teaching profession. It shows that teachers matter, and therefore I'm happy that lives of my learners and other people in the community are going to be transformed.
With this win, Tabichi has brought recognition not only to his school, but also to the entire nation. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta hosted him at State House Nairobi and termed him an inspiration to the society. Gerishon Mungai, one of Tabichi's students, was in the jubilant crowd.
We are glad and excited because of the victory that Mr. Tabichi have brought to us. We thank everyone who participated in the affair. Special thanks goes to the Almighty God who have granted us the victory, and we hope that this victory will make us go far.
Another student, Lucy Karanja, says she's glad to welcome Brother Tabichi back to school.
For the award that Brother Mokaya won, it will really help our school to improve the status of our schools. As you can see, the classes are not enough for the students, and also the laboratory is not well equipped. So we hope that Brother Mukai will help us in building the classes and equipping our laboratory.
Born into a farming family of six, Lucy wants to become a doctor one day. Our family sells crops such as maize and beans to pay her school fees. Established in 2007, the school is located in a remote village in Nakuru County, about 185 kilometers from Nairobi. The area is semi-arid, its electricity supply is unreliable, and it lacks running water. Most of the school's 475 students are from underprivileged backgrounds, and some are orphaned. Tabichi's fellow teachers and friends also praised him for his dedication. Elijah Kebene is a teacher at the school.
He has encouraged us about integrating ICT with our lessons in a bid to make learning interesting, in a bid to make learners relate what they are being taught in class and what happens outside or in the real world.
The $1 million award is presented every year to a teacher who has made an outstanding contribution to their profession. Tabichi, who dedicates 80% of his $400 monthly salary to his students, was awarded the prize for his dedication and hard work. Ruben Chama, VOA News, reporting from Joro, Kenya.
Finally, the editor of the Al-Watan Arabic-speaking newspaper has escaped from Juba. Christopher Michael says he fled because he has been receiving death threats from unknown telephone numbers in Juba. Michael says the South Sudan Media Authority shut down his paper for its reporting on the Sudan protests. We'll have the complete story on that for you tomorrow. And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song We Are All the Same by Nathi Kabachi.
From the mountains, spreading all across the African continent, to the rivers, running through the Nile, all the way to the south. Say, really, Africa, and I know that, 'cause everybody seems to realize that we are all Africans, yes, cradle of humankind, we all the same. If you come from Ghana, if you come from Zambia, if you come from Mali, we all the same. If you come from Guinea, if you come from Senegal, if you come from Malawi, we all the same. Aye, 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 Africa. Aye, 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 we all the same. Aye, 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 Africa. Aye, 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 we are the same. Never mind the color of your skin. It's actually a privilege, not an excuse to be judgmental. Yes. Kudala tina besti twasa. Besti biza loku na loku. But we refuse to go down. My duty is not to discriminate, but more to conscientize, reminding you that yes, we all the same. Like it is in Ghana, it's the same in Europe, it's the same in Asia, we all the same.
We've been listening to Nathi Kabachi with the song We Are All the Same. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We appreciate you joining us. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on the show, you can find us on Twitter with our handle at VOA South Sudan. If you are planning to be out of Juba and cannot tune us in on a FM radio station, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. members. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Australia.